are one. The only question is, do you take that seriously? Because being a disciple is anything but a casual occupation or a sort of hobby. A disciple is a learner, but not in an academic way. In New Testament thought, the aim of a disciple was to become more and more like their rabbi, their teacher. And so putting that together, the whole aim of the Christian life is to become more like Jesus, developing his character and doing the things that he did. But maybe that still needs a bit more probing. In what ways should we be like Jesus? Again, last week we were thinking, beginning to think about that, and saw that as we looked at the Beatitudes, we saw both a picture of Jesus and how we should be. But beyond that, I wonder what you would say is actually at the heart of being a disciple. As a disciple, what does Jesus expect you to be doing? You might like to discuss that with those around you. Or whether you like to or not, that's what we're going to do anyway. So take a few moments to just sort of chat to those around you. As a disciple, what does Jesus expect you to be doing? So, sorry to disturb you. As a disciple, what does Jesus expect you to be doing? Any kind of thoughts? Yep. 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 Using your gifts? Yep. Anything? Doing what he did? That was a...
That's a cover all.
There are actually quite a lot of possible answers to that. And actually, I think there are quite a lot of, there's at least several right answers. But I want to home in on one important aspect. And to do that, we're going to turn to the Bible. If you're on the PCC, this is the passage we started with on Tuesday evening, but only going on a bit further through the passage. Having used it then, it just seemed to me that it would be worth looking at again. It's Luke chapter 5, verses 1 to 16, and Sheila's going to come and read for us.
The reading can be found on page 1032, Luke chapter 5. One day as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, the people were crowding round him and listening to the word of God. He saw at the water's edge two boats left there by the fishermen who were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. Then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch." Simon answered, "Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything, but because you say so, I will let down the nets." When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, I am a sinful man." For he and all his companions were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken, and so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, Simon's partners. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Don't be afraid. From now on you will fish for people." So they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. While Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. When he saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and begged him, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean," and immediately the leprosy left him. Then Jesus ordered him, "Don't tell anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Yet the news about him spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their illnesses. but Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. This is the word of the Lord.
It is, of course, a very well-known passage. First, there's that wonderful bit where you can tell that Peter is really having to bite his tongue. Jesus tells Peter, put out into deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Simon answered, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. There is just so much that's left unsaid in that sentence. But, because you say so, I'll let down the nets. And then there's a huge catch of fish, more than they can cope with. Peter realizes, like never before, that he's in the presence of someone unlike anyone he has met before. Someone who can actually control the movement of fish. This is not just a great teacher. It's someone with the authority that only God can have. And Peter's response is to recognize his own unworthiness. Go away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man. And then, Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on, you will fish for people. Literally, it is, from now on, you will take men alive. Which may sound slightly strange, but it's an expression that was usually used for saving people alive from danger. So if you'd seen somebody in danger, and you managed to rescue them from that danger, you would have taken that person alive. Don't be afraid, Simon. From now on, you are going to rescue people from danger. And in context, that's got to be the danger of eternal death. Simon and the others would be bringing others to salvation. And this, of course, is the initial job description for the first disciple. And of course, it was at the heart of Jesus' mission. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. Now, obviously, in one sense, only Jesus could do that. Only Jesus could die to bring salvation to those who trusted in him. But in another sense, it was a work which his disciples would have a part to play in. If discipleship involves doing what Jesus did, then if Jesus had come to fish for people, his disciples would fish for people. If Jesus had come to save people, take people alive from danger, then his disciples were going to have to play their part in doing that. And now, 2,000 years on, as disciples, the same must be true. If Jesus had come to seek and save the lost, although only he could die for them, one of the things that his disciples must be doing is sharing in that work by sharing what Jesus has done with others, by taking people alive, rescuing people from the very real danger of eternal death. We'll think a bit more about that in a moment. But before we do, we're going to sing again. As we do, we're going to remember that Jesus enables us, amazingly, to know God as our Father. Abba Father, let me be yours and yours alone. That is something that is only possible for those who have been rescued alive, who've been brought out of danger by what Jesus has done. And it's only possible because the Lord is gracious and compassionate. So Jesus told Peter that he would catch people, and by extension, that is what he expects from all of his disciples, that we would be engaged in doing what he did, helping others to find salvation in him. Of course, if nothing else, it's there at the end of Matthew's gospel, the Great Commission, Jesus' final words to his disciples. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations. So if that's what Jesus expects of his disciples, if that is a key way in which we imitate him, I wonder, what are the things that make us reluctant? Again, just sort of share with each other. What are the things, I mean, maybe you aren't reluctant, in which case, please feel free to sit and feel smug. But if you do kind of sense in yourself that reluctance sometimes to be sharing the gospel, to be telling others about Jesus, what causes that? What makes us reluctant? So, what makes us reluctant? A guy called Michael Harvey, who, if you've heard of Back to Church Sunday, Michael Harvey was kind of the guy who effectively invented Back to Church Sunday. And he's a really good speaker on this sort of subject, the whole subject of invitation and so on. And we're hoping that in the run-up to the Hope Morton mission in May, we're going to get Michael Harvey up probably into Wallasey to do some training. But Michael Harvey talks a lot about what is it that makes people reluctant. And he drills down into the reasons that people give. And as he drills down, he always gets, eventually, to the same answer. Fear. We are afraid. We don't think we can do it. We don't have any confidence that we can do it. And right at the bottom line, whatever answer you come out with when he first asks you the question, he will drive you down until you admit, yeah, actually, it's to do with fear. Last Sunday evening, we watched part one of one of Rob Bell's Numa videos. We're going to watch the next bit now. Hopefully, even if you missed last week or have forgotten last week, what he says here will still make sense. Last week, he was talking particularly about the way that that when Jesus called his disciples, they were people who had effectively already dropped out of the system. So a rabbi, a child would go to sort of Torah school and learn. And then, after a while, most of the children would actually drop out of school, and go into the family business. But the best of the best would stay and be trained some more. And then most of them would drop off and go into the family business. But the best of the best of the best would stay and would follow a rabbi. Therefore, the ones who Jesus said, come follow me to, who were already fishermen, weren't the best of the best of the best. They were the also-rans. They were the B team or whatever. They were the people that Jesus chose. So that's kind of a brief synopsis of some of the stuff we saw last week. This is how it goes on. It's an amazing thought, isn't it? If you're a Christian, it's because Jesus chose you. And if he chose you, he believes you can do it. In the context of our reading, you can go and fish for people. And I have to say, this was something that I only really noticed when I was looking at this passage before PCC. Jesus said that just after they'd had this amazing, huge catch of fish. So Jesus doesn't seem to have been saying to Peter, from now on, you will fish for people, and you might now and again catch one or two. Do you remember what Jesus said a bit later in Luke? The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. So where do we begin as disciples in responding to that? The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. So it begins with being called and commissioned to catch people. And the first thing that you do as you step out and set out to do that is to pray. And of course, as you pray, it's about reorienting your perspective. So instead of looking at your own inability, you start looking at God's absolute ability. And of course, if we want to be like Jesus, that will be a priority for us. And again, it's what we heard in our Bible reading. Jesus healed that man who had leprosy, and the result was pretty obvious. Yet the news about him spread all the more, so that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their illnesses. So crowds flocking to Jesus. What an opportunity. So what did Jesus do? But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. And when it says that, literally it means that at the same time that people were flocking to him, Jesus went away to pray. It's an amazing mission opportunity. And Jesus went away and prayed. Maybe if we struggle to believe we could be like Jesus and do the things he did, it's because we struggle even more with this. Taking time out for serious, sustained prayer. I guess that's all of us. Nothing new, really. Jesus called his first disciples, and the first job he gave them was to bring in other disciples. Even though they weren't the best of the best, Jesus called them because he knew they could do it. But if they were going to be like him, they needed to spend time with him. The place they needed to start was with prayer. And if all that was true for the first disciples, I just think it's got to be true for us as disciples today. We've been given this job of going and making more disciples. And we think about the job and it seems, well, it scares us. But if Jesus has chosen us and if he has filled us with his Spirit, it's because he believes we can do it. But we won't do it in our own strength. We won't do it just because Jesus has told us to. We'll do it because we've come before him. We've brought this matter to him. We've prayed about this. And then we've gone out and done it. And so we're just going to take a few moments now to do that, to pray. You might want to pray with the others around you. You might want to pray on your own. That's entirely up to you. But just take some time to pray about whatever opportunities might come your way this week. Or maybe to pray that God will be opening your eyes to where this plentiful harvest might be that quite frankly is very difficult to see around here. To pray that as God has chosen and called you, that he'll actually equip you to do what he's called you to do. So let's just take a bit of time to pray. Say, if you'd like to pray with one another, that's great. If you'd rather do it on your own, that's fine. Let's just spend a bit of time in prayer about this great call to go and be fishers of people, to be rescuing people alive from the danger they're in. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. We start our time together by remembering the great hope that we have because of the resurrection of Jesus. We've thought a bit about our calling as disciples to just be part of God's great purpose of bringing others to know that hope. And we're going to finish by once again turning our thoughts, our minds, our hearts to our great God. Singing together, great is the Lord.